Second Best by D.H. Lawrence. Published by Macmillan Education, a division of Macmillan Publishers Limited. Copyright Macmillan Publishers Limited, 2013. Part 2.
Oh! She cried. He's bit me!
She dropped him to the floor. Dazed, the blind creature fumbled round. Frances felt like shrieking. She expected him to dart away in a flash, like a mouse. And there he remained, groping. She wanted to cry to him to be gone. Anne, in a sudden decision of wrath, caught up her sister's walking cane. With one blow, the mole was dead. Frances was startled and shocked. One moment the little wretch was fussing in the heat, and the next it lay like a little bag, inert and black. Not a struggle, scarce a quiver.
It is dead, Frances said breathlessly.
Anne took her finger from her mouth, looked at the tiny pinpricks and said,
Yes, he is, and I'm glad. They're vicious little nuisances, moles are.
With which her wrath vanished. She picked up the dead animal.
Hasn't it got a beautiful skin?
She mused, stroking the fur with a forefinger, then with her cheek.
Mind, said Frances sharply. You'll have the blood on your skirt.
One ruby drop of blood hung on the small snout, ready to fall. Anne shook it off onto some harebells. Frances suddenly became calm. In that moment, grown up. I suppose they have to be killed, she said, and a certain rather dreary indifference succeeded to her grief. The twinkling crab apples, the glitter of brilliant willows, now seemed to her trifling, scarcely worth the notice. Something had died in her, so that things lost their poignancy. She was calm, indifference overlying her quiet sadness. Rising, she walked down to the brook course.
Here, wait for me, cried Anne, coming tumbling after.
Frances stood on the bridge, looking at the red mud trodden into pockets by the feet of cattle. There was not a drain of water left, but everything smelled green, succulent. Why did she care so little for Anne, who was so fond of her? She asked herself. Why did she care so little for anyone? She did not know, but she felt a rather stubborn pride in her isolation and indifference. They entered a field where stooks of barley stood in rows, the straight, blonde tresses of the corn streaming onto the ground. The stubble was bleached by the intense summer, so that the expanse glared white. The next field was sweet and soft with a second crop of seeds, thin, straggling clover whose little pink knobs rested prettily in the dark green. The scent was faint and sickly. The girls came up in single file, Frances leading. Near the gate, a young man was mowing with the scythe some fodder for the afternoon feed of the cattle. As he saw the girls, he left off working and waited in an aimless kind of way. Frances was dressed in white muslin, and she walked with dignity, detailed and forgetful. Her lack of agitation, her simple, unheeding advance made him nervous. She had loved the far-off Jimmy for 5 years, having had in return his half measures. This man only affected her slightly. Tom was of medium stature, energetic in build. His smooth, fair-skinned face was burned red, not brown, by the sun, and this ruddiness enhanced his appearance of good humour and easiness. Being a year older than Frances, he would have courted her long ago had she been so inclined. As it was, he had gone his uneventful way amiably, chatting with many a girl but remaining unattached, free of trouble for the most part. Only he knew he wanted a woman. He hitched his trousers just a trifle self-consciously as the girls approached. Frances was a rare, delicate kind of being, whom he realised with a queer and delicious stimulation in his veins. She gave him a slight sense of suffocation, Somehow, this morning, she affected him more than usual. She was dressed in white. He, however, being matter-of-fact in his mind, did not realise. His feeling had never become conscious, purposive. Frances knew what she was about. Tom was ready to love her as soon as she would show him. Now that she could not have Jimmy, she did not poignantly care. Still, she would have something. If she could not have the best, Jimmy, whom she knew to be something of a snob, she would have the second best, Tom. She advanced rather indifferently.
"You are back, then?" said Tom.
She marked the touch of uncertainty in his voice.
"No," she laughed. "I'm still in Liverpool."
And the undertone of intimacy made him burn.
"This isn't you, then?"
he asked. Her heart leapt up in approval. She looked in his eyes and for a second was with him.
"Why, what do you think?" she laughed.
He lifted his hat from his head with a distracted little gesture. She liked him, his quaint ways, his humour, his ignorance, and his slow masculinity.
"Here, look here, Tom Smedley," broke in Anne.
"A moody warp. Did you find it dead?" he asked.
"No, it bit me," said Anne.
"Oh, aye. And that got your rug out, did it?"
"No, it didn't,"
Anne scolded sharply.
"Such language."
"Oh, what's up with it?"
"I can't bear you to talk broad."
"Can't you?"
He glanced at Frances. "It isn't nice," Frances said. She did not care, really. The vulgar speech jarred on her as a rule. Jimmy was a gentleman. But Tom's manner of speech did not matter to her.
"I like you to talk nicely," she added.
"Do you?"
he replied, tilting his hat, stirred. "And generally you do, you know." She smiled.
"I'll have a try," he said,
rather tensely gallant.
"What?"
she asked brightly.
"To talk nice to you," he said.
Frances coloured furiously, bent her head for a moment, then laughed gaily, as if she liked this clumsy hint.
"Hey now, you mind what you're saying?" cried Anne,
giving the young man an admonitory pat.
"You wouldn't have to give him all many knocks like that,"
he teased, relieved to get on safe ground, rubbing his arm.
"No, indeed, it died in one blow," said Frances, with a flippancy that was hateful to her.
"You're not so good at knocking him,"
he said, turning to her.
"I don't know, if I'm cross," she said decisively.
"No,"
he replied with alert attentiveness.
"I could," she added harder, "if it was necessary."
He was slow to feel her difference.
"And don't you consider it is necessary?"
he asked with misgiving.
"Well, is it?"
she said, looking at him steadily, coldly.
"I reckon it is,"
he replied, looking away but standing stubborn. She laughed quickly.
"But it isn't necessary for me," she said with slight contempt.
"Yes, that's quite true," he answered.
She laughed in a shaky fashion.
"I know it is," she said, and there was an awkward pause. "Why, would you like me to kill moles then?"
she asked tentatively after a while.
"They do us a lot of damage,"
he said, standing firm on his own ground, angered.
"Well, I'll see the next time I come across one," she promised defiantly.
Their eyes met, and she sank before him, her pride troubled. He felt uneasy and triumphant and baffled, as if fate had gripped him. She smiled as she departed.
"Well,"
said Anne, as the sister went through the wheat stubble,
"I don't know what you two's been jarring about, I'm sure."
"Don't you?" laughed Francis significantly.
No, don't. But at any rate, Tom Smedley's a good deal better to my thinking than Jimmy. So there. And nicer.
Perhaps he is, said Francis coldly. And the next day, after a secret, persistent hunt, she found another mole playing in the heat. She killed it, and in the evening, when Tom came to the gate to smoke his pipe after supper, she took him the dead creature.
"Here you are, then," she said.
"Did you catch it?" he replied, taking the velvet corpse into his fingers and examining it minutely. This was to hide his trepidation.
"Did you think I couldn't?"
she asked, her face very near his.
"Nay, I didn't know."
She laughed in his face, a strange little laugh that caught her breath, all agitation and tears and recklessness of desire. He looked frightened and upset. She put her hand to his arm.
"Shall you go out with me?"
he asked in a difficult, troubled tone. She turned her face away with a shaky laugh. The blood came up in him, strong, overmastering. He resisted it, but it drove him down and he was carried away. Seeing the winsome, frail nape of her neck, fierce love came upon him for her and tenderness.
"We'll have to tell your mother," he said.
And he stood, suffering, resisting his passion for her. "Yes," she replied in a dead voice, but there was a thrill of pleasure in this death.